Okay, recording. So, hello. I was going to say good morning, but it doesn't make any sense because with a podcast, you could be listening to it any time of the day. But anyway, good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Student Accountant podcast series. And I'm here with Karen Young, who is the UK Director for Hays Accounting and Finance. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the podcast series.
Thank you.
And so we know what your job title is, but do you want to tell us a bit about what that means, what that involves, what you do for Hays?
Yeah, sure. So I'm responsible for our accountancy and finance recruitment business in the UK. And what that looks like, it's over 400 finance recruitment consultants who all specialise in some form of accountancy and finance recruitment for their customers, for employers. And that's from a footprint of just over 90 offices around the UK. What does that really mean? That team helps to find someone a job around about every 10 minutes into a finance job in the UK. So, wow. You know, during the course of the time we're chatting, hopefully people will be getting those really great phone calls a lot of the time.
Excellent. So what's your background and what was your training? How did you get here?
I joined Hays as a graduate and obviously as a student myself at one point, quite a lot of years ago, over 20 years. And I've worked for Hays Accountancy and Finance all of that time. So I've been really fortunate during that time to build relationships. People count in your network. We might touch on that a little bit later. But to build relationships with undergraduates and students in the really early years of their career, potentially help them to get some temporary work and experience on their CV, but then work with them consistently through 15, 17, 18 years now, helping those people achieve sometimes their first finance director or chief financial officer position. So that's the bit that I really love about my job is helping people.
All right. So do you actually sort of maintain relationships with clients through different jobs throughout their lives? I always imagine with recruitment, it's a sort of one-shot deal. You just get a job and then that's it. But you actually see those people again at different points of their career.
Do you know what? That's actually really pertinent to what we've come here to talk to about today in a way, because the recruitment market has changed so much over 40, 50 years. And the UK, people could be listening from all around the world, but the UK does have probably the most mature recruitment marketplace in the world. And it has evolved a lot. And people think about looking for a job, seeing a job advert, applying, used to be in the local paper in my days, but now obviously online, waiting for a response and it moving from there. And recruitment's changed, obviously, certainly at Hays, it's a lot more about us finding talent, engaging with talent and keeping in touch and almost where we can. And not everyone needs us all of the time, but being there, being a lifelong partner. And of course, things like social media, things like LinkedIn kind of help you to do that over periods where you might not need someone for 2 or 3 years, but you can just keep in touch and say, how are things? Do you need any help? Do you need your salary benchmarking for your appraisal in December, those type of things? So yeah for sure, it's definitely about the long-term piece.
So do you have in your head a kind of database of all different people? Do you sort of remember people, or is it more that you just
it's quite
online?
An interesting place in my head, certainly. it's great, that team of over 400 people that work in the UK and obviously many thousands in our 33 countries around the world, and I do have lots of engagement internationally as well with my colleagues that run our finance recruitment businesses in different countries, but people will come to me and say, oh Karen, I've just been to see XYZ and they remembered you and they couldn't quite remember when they last saw you, and I'll work it out and go, I think it was 2005, and so there's a lot in my head. I mean, clearly recruitment businesses run operational data as well, but I'll generally remember people either instantaneously, or it might just take a little bit of prompting.
So what we want to talk about is job seeking interviews. What do you think are the most important things to think about when you're getting out there looking for work as an accountant?
I mean, the key thing is, whilst I've just said that the world of recruitment has changed an awful lot, we didn't used to have social media, we didn't used to have LinkedIn, but right here, right now, the most important thing for you as someone, if you are looking for a job, internally applies as well as externally, actually, it's still here today, and the most important thing is your CV. That's your most important sales document. Now, what that might look like in 5 years, 7 years, I'm not sure, that might change, but that's the most important thing to focus your attention on, because without that, it's very unlikely that you're going to get that that phone call, if you like, or that online request to come in for an interview. So that's first and foremost.
And thinking about that, I mean, how do you find a job when you don't have much experience? What can you do to make your CV stand out when you actually haven't really worked yet?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the thing to think about, and you might not always believe this when you're out there looking for a job, because it can be hard work, right? Is that the candidate with the most experience doesn't always get the job. And people always think that they do, but they don't. So the important thing is about tailoring your CV in the first instance. If you're applying for three jobs this afternoon, it shouldn't look the same. It should go off slightly different to each of those three jobs. Otherwise, you're probably not going to get the interview. And I can talk a little bit more about that and why. But some of that on a real practical thing can be about looking at the job and person specification, looking at what is written down sometimes in bullet points around what you're going to be doing in the job, looking at your own CV and your bullet points and thinking, well, it's a bit like kind of Christmas wish lists and things we want to achieve in life, that you're probably right with the thing you want to achieve the most first and then the next thing second and third. Employers tend to do that when they're creating job and person specifications. Oh, what do I need? So they'll put the most important thing first and then what's next. And if the thing that you've got is fifth on your bullet points on your CV, for example, right, just reorder it and put it to first. Because again, how we read and absorb content, you'll remember that first and that will be the thing that hits them. And the other thing is about mirroring the language also without changing who you are. You've got to be authentic here. Yeah. But it is about some subtle use of language. And that I'm not talking about being hugely into that, but just looking. So an example would be if on a personal job specification, someone had put management experience, yet your CV talked about leadership experience. If you think about how people scan, sometimes with technology these days, but also the way that a human brain will scan, the two things would have some similarities, but you know, especially through a piece of technology, that might not get picked up. So yes, you've got to think about keywords and just looking at language and making sure. An example might be around the purchase ledger and accounts payable function in finance. Some businesses use purchase ledger more than accounts payable, but they kind of are the same thing with some tiny subtleties. So right, if you're applying for a job that had accounts payable, you'd just shift that and move your CV to accounts payable if it said purchase ledger, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about if you've just been studying, you haven't really worked yet? Are there ways to be creative with your CV so you can make things that you've done in your personal life relevant to
Definitely. And so tailoring your CV to the job, looking at your use of language and mirroring it. Then in terms of if you haven't got a lot of practical experience on the CV, it is then around making the most of your personal statement, which generally should be one of the first things that's coming up on your CV. And that's your chance to get some of your transferable skills coming through. I prefer to say competencies and transferable skills than soft skills. It's just my personal choice. I don't really like the term soft skills these days. But if we look at the difference, if you don't have the technical experience on the CV, you've got to look at the competencies. And actually, in the world of work we're in now, where everything is in constant change, and you've got automation, digital transformation, robotics coming through, it's pointless an employer actually coming to an agency like Hays and saying, what I'm looking for is to have a minimum of, I'm really going to over-egg this slightly, 3.2 years of experience in XYZ and specific knowledge of this particular piece of finance software. Because let's face it, that piece of software and kit is probably going to change tomorrow. Yeah. It's going to change in 3-6 months. So we are trying as a consultancy to help educate employers to move away from recruiting to order on actually all that past kind of experience that they've historically done on a CV and go, you're hiring for capability here. And that actually plays to the fore if you are a student and you haven't had that much experience. If you can get that across in terms of identifying what those competencies are an employer's looking for and getting your transferable skills across on your CV, it should become an easier world to apply for a job in. And the other point would be around, you know, voluntary experience, things like that. Despite what people think, they do count and employers do look at them. So anything you've done in terms of, I don't know, being a treasurer for a dramatic society or anything to do with charity, and particularly obviously if there's been some bookkeeping and finance skills there. Yeah. But again, thinking transferable skills, what are the common things that any employer is looking for? Communication skills, teamwork, you know, getting that through as well. And you can do that with a good personal statement, and also possibly with a skills, key skills section underneath the personal statement. And those two things should be front page, first page, top half of your CV.
Right, it's interesting, isn't it? So it's kind of moving away from just having specific technical skills to competencies,
yeah.
and that you can demonstrate your personality, the kind of person that you are, your willingness to adapt to change, because that's going to be more important than
correct.
Actually just knowing how to use this
correct
particular
now
system.
We are in this sort of between the two worlds situation as a recruitment consultant advising and helping people to find the right job. If every employer that I worked with kind of was on the same page as me on that, it would be a beautiful place. It's an education process, but people are realizing that more and more, and of course through policies and the right thing to do, and employers looking more at their diversity and inclusion programs, mm. and through obviously legislation as well, and things like ages coming off CV and backgrounds and blind CVs, which some people listening may not be so aware of, but where anything that can point to any type of background you've come from are removed,
yeah.
Then ultimately you're starting to work in this world where it is about transferable skills and future capability,
yeah.
which is great, really exciting.
That is really exciting, yeah, because there's so much conditioning that we have, and so any little things we might, you know, employers might not even be aware of their prejudices or discrimination.
Absolutely, yes. So whole different topic, but you know, yes, it is in the backdrop. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of competition, I suppose, as well when you're setting out. So what can you do to set yourself apart from other applicants?
So I've said that the most important thing still is about your CV and it being a really great personal sales document. It's the only thing that's going to get you through the door for an interview, but you can also do other things outside of that. So I've mentioned LinkedIn a couple of times. Mm. Quite a lot of people may not yet be on LinkedIn that are listening to this podcast. Historically, over the last 10 years, I've tended to find it's been sort of management and leadership that have historically put profiles on first, but actually more and more students and part qualified accountants are putting profiles on. And I would recommend, if you haven't, that you do, and there's some advice on our website on hayes.co.uk that you can look at to help with that. And again, we're not looking on LinkedIn. It shouldn't be an exact replica of your CV. It should be in terms of accuracy. If you've put university dates on there, if you've put what papers you've got to in your ACCA, if you've got any work experience on there and dates, they should exactly mirror your CV. That is attention to detail. And
yeah.
what you don't want to do is spend days and hours on your CV getting that right, and then you think, oh, I'll just throw my profile onto LinkedIn and I think I studied from 93 to 96, and then if you're going for a finance job and those dates don't match up, that's one of the biggest red flags where someone kind of goes, well, what were they doing? And it's just
right,
kind of
okay.
cause for doubt. And then you're looking at kind of keywords and skills that you see commonly used through the myriad of person and job specifications that it's great you can find online these days, to make sure that those are consistently coming through your profile, as long as obviously you've got those. It's not about making something up, but using that to get that across on your LinkedIn profile. And joining, making sure that you're following the ACCA, making sure that you're involved with institute groups on LinkedIn.
Right.
Again, not always to be an author. That takes time, and you've got to have something to say, but you can like and you can comment,
right.
and those type of things help to get you noticed as well. And I think also, don't underestimate the face-to-face element as well. If there's institute events and networking going on locally, you know, try and get along to those if you can. The importance of a people network to you in your career, and people that you meet that could be a recruitment consultant when you're an undergraduate,
yeah.
who then stays with you and you choose to stay with them for 15, 16, 17 years, as I've described earlier.
Yeah.
That's really important.
You never really know who you're going to meet as well at those things, I think. You can have, it's good to have a clear idea of what, where you're putting your energy and what you're doing, but also things just come out of the blue, don't they?
Absolutely. And I was at a networking event in East Lancashire a couple of months ago, and there was actually it was an undergraduate there who'd chosen to come along to a Finance Institute event, and she was outstanding. She was outstanding the way she presented herself at that event. The questions that she asked were insightful. You know, I've connected with her on LinkedIn, and as much as she's not yet looking for a job, I hope that we will stay in touch and I can be a mentor or sponsor for her through her career. You know, even if we don't at Hayes find her a job, I hope I'll be helpful to her.
Yeah. So it's really, it's about embodying it really the whole time, isn't it?
Yes.
Putting your whole self into
it is I'm not saying that it's easy, and I'm not saying that you don't have to put some time to it, but you know, these early steps in your career are really important. So that sort of footprint and what you leave behind, and I suppose whilst I touch on that, the social media piece with LinkedIn doesn't mean that you can't be on, I'm going to not get all the social media groups up to date now, but I'll show my age, like your Facebook and Instagram. Yeah. It doesn't mean that you can't put the picture of your horse or your holiday on there.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, my key advice on that is just thinking, what would I want a future employer or my current employer to be able to see?
Yeah.
And if there's holiday photos that you wouldn't, then put your privacy settings on.
Yeah.
And just think about that. That's my best advice on that. We've all got, you know, these days, a lot of us have got sort of personal social media things as well.
Yeah.
But just make sure you've got your privacy settings appropriate.
So do you think a potential employer would, who was interviewing someone for a job, would look at their social medias before,
yes,
an interview?
Yes, I know they do.
Oh, they do.
So, okay, this is slightly different because in my career I've spent a lot of time appointing into senior leadership positions, so for finance directors and chief financial officers, but where I've been on a retained assignment to appoint for those positions, I've been on a sort of round robin email with the rest of the board as the external consultant, and I've seen a managing director say, okay, Nick, HR director, you have a look at LinkedIn and I'll have a look at Facebook, and like I said, they're not looking to say, oh my goodness, they've put a picture of a sea and a sunset on
yeah.
We don't want them to work for us, but they're looking for this consistency on dates and things like that. So
yeah.
People often say to me, well, I'm not on LinkedIn, how important is it? And okay, I don't think you're not going to get a job if you're not on LinkedIn. I don't think someone's going to look and go, well, they're not on. I think it helps them to have a look, and I think if you're going to put yourself onto LinkedIn, just take the time to get your profile right.
Yeah, I suppose it could give you an edge. Again, a lot of it is about impressions, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like giving an impression. So if they look there and it's consistent,
yes,
and you maybe have a little bit extra, something personal.
Yes.
You have a flavour like what your passions are, or something,
yes,
that...
You know, consistent professional, they can see you've engaged with your relevant institute groups. From a finance and accountancy perspective,
yeah,
they might see that you're looking at institute publications, that you may be following the Financial Times, you know, those type,
yeah,
of things. They can just be the extra things, which is what you asked around what makes you stand out.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So just moving to interviews,
yes,
what are some kind of do's and don'ts about interviews and preparing for interviews?
I mean, that key word is the sort of most standout thing around preparing. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm sure that no one listening wouldn't go unprepared into an interview, but it's thinking about the practicalities of, can you do a dry run and check how long it's going to take to get there, and the old mantra of, you know, if you arrive on time, you're already 10 minutes too late. I still stand by that. If I'm interviewing and someone is late and they haven't given me a warning that the tube was stuck, or, you know, this has happened, then, you know, it does stand out. So practical stuff. You can obviously then use LinkedIn. You can look up the person that's interviewing you. So you can be a bit of a sleuth from that perspective. And I would expect someone coming to see me, or if I have a business meeting these days, generally I will have looked that person up, and I know they'll probably have looked me up. That's the way it is. And then you can look at who they're connected with. You can look at who would be competitors to the organisation that you're going to interview, so that you've got kind of that market knowledge as well.
Mm-hmm.
So those are really key, aside from the obvious of looking at a person and job specification and matching your experience to the competencies. And there's so much more I could talk about interviews, but then it's looking at those. So again, we're potentially talking, maybe if you haven't got that much practical experience on your CV, looking at, okay, so what are the competencies and the skills that this person is looking to hire, and what have I got? And my advice is, whether it's Excel spreadsheet, whether it's on a tablet, whether it's an old-fashioned piece of paper, pulling out what seems to be the five most important things that are coming through. So that could be communication, teamwork. I know we talk about creativity a little bit these days as well. Influencing people, and then sitting and thinking, right, what stories have I got to tell? And it's storytelling about each of those. Oh, yes, there was that scenario where I was doing voluntary work and I had to persuade people around to my way of thinking. What was the scenario? What was my role in it? What was the outcome? What might I have done differently? And then thinking, yeah, I'm happy. That's a good story. I think that demonstrates my ability to persuade people around to my way of thinking to get a course of action. What second example have I got? So that if you're in an interview situation and you've given an answer, and then someone says, could you possibly give me another example that you don't, you know, freeze like a rabbit in headlights and you've got something there. And My top tip on that, from personal experience, is that then you can just have that on a piece of paper, and it might just be, you might write down someone's initials, you know, I'm Karen Young, like KY scenario, but you've thought about that in your head, you've worked through that example, you've done your preparation piece, and actually most people going in interview have got a notepad with some questions that they'd like to ask at the end. And then you could just literally have, you know, the five competency words written down on the side of a notepad. And then and you just think, in times of pressure, when we freeze, which we do, you can just literally glance down at your notepad, not read a ream of notes and think, I know my story, because it's my story. But it's sometimes just that prompt that means you can deal with it quickly and respond under pressure. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
it's
quite
hard to talk about it rather than show it.
But, no, I understand. I mean, because I was going to say, what I've sometimes struggled with in an interview is that, I suppose it's nerves, but when your mind sort of goes blank and you can't think of anything to say in answer to a question that you're being asked, and then you go out and you think,
it's happened to me about 7 years ago, actually, when I was going for another director role at Hayes, and it was a full competency based interview, and I had actually done that. And it's courtesy in an interview to say, I've just got a couple of questions I've got written down that I'd like to ask at the end, is it okay if I've got that in front of me? I would say it's almost impossible that an interviewer is going to go, no, I'm not happy with that. So that's fine. So your little notes that would mean nothing to anyone else, to just have in your margin of the notepad down the side, you know, they're not going to even know that they're there.
Yeah.
But if you're asked a question, tell me about a time when you've had to influence people around to your way of thinking and what you did. And you're like, oh, goodness, that you can literally take another top tip. Always ask for a glass of water. You can take a sip of your water.
Nice.
Look at that little notepad and think, oh, initials, Karen Young. Yes, I'm going to talk about when I persuaded Karen to do something. The glass of water also helps you to just have perfectly natural thinking time. It just, you know, without it, you're going, could I just have a moment to think about that? Which can be quite awkward. If you just say, I just need a sip of water. Just take it quite slowly and naturally. But we're talking, it's buying you 10 seconds, but that 10 seconds gives your brain time to process and you just to get yourself into, right, I know my story because I am me, and I know what I did.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's really useful, actually. And just thinking that in a way, showing that you've prepared and you know yourself, you know that you might be a little bit nervous, so you've made some notes.
That's human,
human, and maybe also shows that a competency of being able to cope with oneself and what one needs in a situation, rather than trying to hide it and trying to sort of hold it all together and be perfect.
And the scenario I mentioned, that a question was asked, and I have to admit, I thought, I really don't know how to, I'm not even sure I'm sure what the question is. So I said, could you repeat that, please? And then I did sort of took my sip of water, looked down at my note, I thought, come on. And I thought, no, I've got something, because I had this scenario one, scenario two.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, no, scenario one it's not right. Scenario two probably is. And, you know, I did get the job, and I shared my little sort of, you know, have your five competencies, scenario one, scenario two, with quite a few people at a time when we were changing the business a lot in about 2011, 2012 at Hayes. And people that went for sort of PA to director jobs, you know, not all salespeople. Everyone that I've shared that with has actually come out of an interview. Everyone at that time got the job they wanted, put it that way.
Oh, so, wow, okay.
A little tip that might have helped.
Help. And even just the fact that you're willing to say, I don't know, and I don't know what you mean. Like, could you
repeat? No, just asking them to repeat the question.
Yeah,
because they will realise that it's not come across as clearly. And actually the outcome of that was, sort of post that whole interview and selection process, the interview panels, because I think there was four people on the panel interviewing each individual, it was quite full on, came out and said, that question was awful, but, you know, we had to be consistent and ask the same question to all of you, and all of you struggled.
Right.
So they'd got the question wrong.
Right, okay.
So people will take that into account as well. If they're following a proper competency-based assessment in which everyone is asked the same questions, and they are scoring, obviously, a competency assessment against it, they'll realise that if everyone said, sorry, could you just repeat that, and looks horrendously confused, that they'll take that into some form of account as well through the interview process, or they should do.
So that's brave, and it's good to be confident enough to say, I didn't understand that.
Yes. Yes. Well, they wouldn't, if you were working for them, they wouldn't want you to just follow a course of action that you weren't clear on. And so those things are important to in the right way, push back a little bit. I think it's how, because if you say, I'm sorry, I don't understand that, and your whole tone of voice is kind of, oh, I'm now really phased by this. Mm. If it's kind of like, okay, would you mind just repeating that so I make sure that I'm correct in my understanding of what you want me to say.
It's coming from like more of a curious place than a
confident
sort of
and
freaking
and
out.
I want to get this right because I want to do well.
Yeah. Great. Okay, well, that's been really helpful, Karen. Is there anything else you want to share with us? I was going to say, if anyone out there is interested in working with Hayes, how would they contact you?
Well, I am on LinkedIn.
You're on LinkedIn, it's easy. Yeah.
If you put in Karen Young Hayes, I should come up fairly easily. And actually, it's a fair point. I do write, I write quite a few blogs and articles quite frequently. Some are obviously aimed at leadership, some are around people starting in their careers and at students. We have a program called The Future of Finance, where we work with undergraduates in the UK and some universities. So there's also a LinkedIn group called Hayes Future of Finance UK. So people could request to join that as well, and I'd be delighted to help. But anything I can do to help, really happy for people to pop me a note on LinkedIn. And who knows, I could still be in touch with them in 15 years' time and helping people find that first finance director role.
Excellent. Oh, thank you so much for coming to talk to us.
Great.
And, have a great day.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, bye.